jeans on. Black. My leather black jeans on. Black. My body means on. Martin, I'm getting my scream on. End of the kingdom. Black. But watch what you bring on. You see a black man with a white woman at the top floor, they gon' come to kill King Kong. Middle America packed in. Can they see me in my black skin? Black. Number one question they asking. Fucking big question you asking. Black. If I don't get ran at my Catholics, it's cause the conservative Baptist. Claiming I'm overreacting like the black kids in Chirac, bitch. Bow in the morning, and I'm zoning, they say I'm possessed. It's an omen, I keep it 300. Like the Romans, 300 bitches. Where the Trojans, baby, we living in the moment. I've been a menace for the longest, but I ain't finished. I'm devoted, and you know it, and you know it. So follow me, y'all, cause this shit about to go. I'm doing 500, I'm out of control. But there's nowhere to go, and there's no way to slow. If I knew what I knew in the past, I would have been like that on your ass.
Welcome to the 2-4. Zach Vanoss, Sean O'Neill, and I think we're in a pretty good mood right now, aren't we, Mr. O'Neill?
We said a week ago tonight that we were going to podcast one way or the other on Friday, that we'd either be in a horrible mood or in a cautiously optimistic mood, I guess, and it's certainly the latter. Obviously, anyone who's listening to this knows 1-0. Carey Price the first star, and we have a chance to defend our gold.
Indeed. In the interest of housekeeping, since we last cast, Canada is 3-0. An OT win over the Finns, that was 2-1. You remember that? Think back to that game.
Yeah.
And 2-1 defeat over the Latvians. It was an interesting encounter. And then 1-0, Carey Price shutout win over the United States of America. Canada advancing to the gold medal game where they'll meet the Swedes on Sunday, very early in the morning here on the East Coast.
And a women's gold medal thrown in for good measure in one of the most exciting games of all time.
Yeah, I was going to throw that in. So we got that. We got Canada blasted up the medal board. We now sit third or second, depending on how you want to cut it, either behind Norway and Russia or just behind Norway. What do we got? Pretty much guaranteed silver or gold in that men's game. We got 9 gold medals. We've had an epic past 3 days. It's been a good 48 to 72 hours for Canada at the Olympics as we're closing out Sochi. We started strong. Things got a little bit light in the middle, and now we're finishing. It just seems like every time you turn around, there's another championship for Canada in one thing or another.
Yeah, it's been fantastic, and yeah, there was a slight lull maybe, but I think that was just, you know.
You can't win them all every day.
Yeah, no, exactly. So I don't think anyone has anything to complain about. Like you said, it all, fairly or unfairly, all kind of hinges a little bit on Sunday morning. If we lose that game, especially if it's a heartbreaker or something, that takes a bit of the shine off it. But right now, no complaints. Everything was pretty fucking awesome right now.
Last week we talked about what our favorite event was. And I said, I think outside the hockey, and I think I said the moguls. And that's because I completely forgot about the ski cross and snowboard cross being an Olympic sport. That is a fun sport to watch.
It's a fun sport to watch. It's also a completely made-up sport that we kind of threw in there.
It's not a completely made-up sport. You go out on the hill, you race down it. That's just what skiing is. It's the only sport I've ever taken part in. It's not really true, but sort of true.
It's fun to watch. It's a little X Gamesy, but it is fun to watch.
Oh, a little X Gamesy? Sorry.
A little bit.
Sorry for bringing too much edge to your Olympics, Mr. Square. How about that women's game? I mean,
That was unbelievable.
Is that not... that's one for the books. Holy crap. I'll be honest, I had to have someone go out there, hand me the towel back, because I'd thrown it in. I really had. But the women, they did not. They had heart and conviction, and they somehow won that thing.
Yeah, as soon as we hit about, I'd say, the 5-minute mark, it kind of set in for me, like, God, we're not gonna pull this off. And then to come back the way they did, really one of the most exciting, incredible sporting events I've ever watched. I mean, the men are going to have, you know, the men's gold is going to be, you know, if we win gold, it'll be fantastic for a million different reasons. That'll be, you know, probably the one that lasts throughout history. But it's going to be hard to top that women's game. That was unbelievable.
We'll get into that game a little bit more, but this question isn't in the 12-pack. I mean, where does that stand in all-time great Canadian games? It's got to be right up there with the gold medal game from Vancouver and 72 and the Summit Series at this point. Like, it's just,
it was unbelievable. And I hope a year down the line, let alone 10 years, 15 years down the line, we're still talking about it. We still remember it. I'm worried it'll sort of fade away a little bit because those things tend to happen, and especially tends to happen with the women's game. We won't be seeing the highlights mm-hmm. all the time like we do in the NHL. I mean, that women's gold medal game in Salt Lake City was pretty damn impressive too, when the gals killed off the 8 or 9 penalties in a row or whatever it was. And that's kind of, I mean, we all remember it, but no one really talks about it as one of the all-time great moments in Canadian international hockey. And I'm worried this women's game will sort of fade into the background a little bit, but I really hope it doesn't, because, and I hope I'm not guilty of that at some point, because that really was one of the most incredible things I've ever seen.
No, it's ridiculous. Congratulations to them. They got the first of the two that Canadians feel we need to get to. Check it off as a successful Olympics.
I mean, listen, if we sweep hockey gold in back-to-back Olympics, that's a pretty damn impressive feat.
That's not too bad. All that sits between us and that is the Swedes at this point. They're not exactly a bad hockey team. I mean, is there any surprise at all that it's Canada-Sweden when all is said and done?
The only surprise is that these things rarely seem to go chalk. They rarely seem to play to form. But before the season, before the tournament, these were co-favorites maybe, or they were certainly 1-2 in most people's books.
Yeah.
And you know, you could argue up until today that the Americans have been the most impressive team on ice, but I think these are the two best teams in the world. I think these are the two best teams in the tournament. It's not a shock. Like I said, it's only a shock because it rarely works out that way.
Let's get into the 12-pack here. Question one, who has been Canada's men's best player in the tournament so far?
I'm very tempted to go with our guy, Carey Price, and he's in the discussion. But I'm going to go with Drew Doughty, who is a fantastic NHL player, a fantastic regular season NHL player. He's going to win a Norris sooner rather than later, I would think. But he's also a guy who really seems to step it up in the 2010 Olympics and then in the 2012 Stanley Cup run. And now in this Olympics, this is a guy who's really made for the big stage. And, you know, we know how great the Canadian defense has been. We know how many, you know, what a big percentage of the team's points are coming from the back end. Weber's been great. Doughty's been even better. Just everything he does, the vision, the skating, the passing, the shot from the point, you know, the physicalities. He is one fantastic defenseman, and he's been, I think, our best player. I think he's been the MVP of the tournament. And I think, you know, I think the MVP of the tournament will be a defenseman. It'll either be Doughty if we win gold, or Carlson if the Swedes win gold.
If it's Carlson. Anyways, before we get into that, for me, Doughty's the answer. I completely agree. In the interest of throwing in a forward, not just because he got the goal today, but Jamie Benn, I was kind of an advocate for getting this guy on the team beforehand, and even I did not have an understanding of how smart and intelligent and talented of a hockey player this guy is. The Dallas Stars really got something in Jamie Benn, and I've been extremely, extremely impressed with him, his ability. I mean, Jamie Benn's one of those guys that you kind of you root for to be on the team because you think he's one of the top 12 to 15 forwards in Canada, but he's instead looked like one of the elite forwards in Canada throughout this tournament. Didn't expect him to really stand out that much considering the elite company that he's in on this team. I have been very impressed with what he's done so far. But if I'm going by, you know, the only real game, some might say, that Canada's played so far, Sidney Crosby looked like the best player in the world in the game against the United States on Friday.
Yep, he did. And listen, our forwards looked good today.
Holy shit.
I know we only scored one goal, but we're going up against one of the best goalies in the world. I mean, Crosby looked great. He hasn't hit the back of the net yet, but he looked great. Corey Perry has looked fantastic all tournament long. He hasn't scored yet, but he's looked great. Rick Nash,
my God.
I forget sometimes how much fun Rick Nash is to watch. I don't think it's a motivation thing or whatever, but when he's on, when he's really firing on all cylinders, he might be my favorite player in the league to watch. He is just incredible.
I'm going to say outside of Chris Kunitz, everybody in the game against the Americans impressed.
Yep,
even Chris Kunitz had, you know, by the end he's not a bad player, but I just don't think he looks like he's out of his element. He's literally out of his league on this team. Everyone else seems to kind of fit and be able to play at the speed and the skill level and the finish level. Just I say that despite the fact that Canada doesn't have any goals in this tournament, but Kunitz just feels he's there. He's in the right place, but he just doesn't have that bit of extra that the rest of Team Canada does.
Yeah, and I know some people are saying that that's sort of preconceived notions coloring our view of the guy. I don't think that's the case. Like you said, he's a good player, and he's been, you know, he's had his chances, and it's not like everyone else on the team's been burying them, and he hasn't. And you know, maybe he gets in the right position a couple times on Sunday, and Crosby feeds him, and he gets two goals, and we're all happy he's on the team. But he hasn't quite finished. He's taken some stupid penalties. I just don't think the skill level, like you said, is quite up there with the rest of the guys on the team. You know, it's not Rob Zanier, but it's not a great pick. You still wonder how much better this team would be if it was Claude Giroux that was on the roster, if it was Eric Staal, even though it was on the roster, Taylor Hall, Tyler Seguin, take your pick.
I mean, that game, the game against the U.S., was arguably one of the most perfect hockey games I've ever seen a team play. Everybody just seemed to do their job. I was talking about it earlier, it was like a symphony. Like, it was just being directed perfectly. Did the Americans get their chance? Of course. Like, you're never going to play against a team as talented as the U.S. iced out there. You're never going to play a game in which, you know, they get zero opportunity and you make them look like, I'd like to say the Latvians or something, but they gave us enough trouble. You know, they make them look like the Austrians. You can play a perfect game. Talent is going to be there. They're going to counterpunch. But in terms of pound for pound out there, Canada just seemed to do everything they needed to 99 times out of 100. First on the puck, making it. It's amazing to see after watching the Canadians play all season long. And this isn't me trying to, you know, shit all over the Habs or anything. But it's amazing to see what really talented players playing the game and executing an efficient and intelligent game plan looks like. It's really something to watch. I haven't seen a team pull off that kind of success, I don't think, ever in a single game. And you got to think, as a coach for Mike Babcock, as much as he'll never say it and as much as he can't ever say it, because he still needs these guys to go and perform on Sunday. I mean, that's got to be a treat to coach, to just have that many weapons that you can use that efficiently. That's just got to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's funny, like, this team has played damn good hockey, and part of it, I think, is the opponents we played and the style they played. Part of it's the ice size, I think. I mean, we're really not scoring goals. We're squeaking out 2-1 victories, and if you told me before the tournament started, you know, the team's only going to have 13 goals after four games, every single game's going to go down to the wire, I would have thought this team's underperforming, but they're not really underachieving. They're playing pretty damn close to perfect hockey. They're just not quite finding the back of the net yet. And, you know, obviously over the course of an 82-game season, that stuff balances out. But over the course of an 8-game tournament, it doesn't necessarily.
Yeah.
So the worry is that you put 52 shots on Sweden and you only get one by Lundqvist, which is entirely possible.
No, but that very much could happen. But the other
part of me thought today was going to be, you know, I was nervous going into the game, but part of me thought, you know, maybe this is the game where just the law of averages, you know, come into play and they bury four or five, and that didn't happen. Maybe the Sweden game is, but you know, it's not, you're not guaranteed that those things are going to regress to the mean by the end of the tournament.
Certainly not. That's
number.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I got nothing. I got nothing important.
Number two on the list. Marie-Philippe Poulin, is she the most clutch hockey player of her generation, male or female?
So she has both goals in 2010 in that gold medal game. She's got the game tire and the OT winner in Sochi. Yeah, that's going to be tough to find somebody who's got more clutch goals than that. Right now, I think she's definitely the most clutch goal scorer of her generation. She's struggling through the tournament, but when push came to shove and someone needed to make it count twice in the two biggest games she's ever had the chance to play in, she's managed to score huge, huge goals. I would say Kane's right up there. He's clutch as hell, but she's more clutch.
Part of me hates these questions when they happen so close to the event because
yeah, that's true.
If you say no, it just feels like you're shitting on Poulin, who just provided an entire nation with one of the most memorable moments of our lifetime. I think she's in the discussion. I think Crosby's in that discussion as well. I think Taves is in that discussion as well. We'll see what happens Sunday if Taves has a hat trick. If Crosby scores the game winning goal for the second Olympics in a row, maybe we revisit the rankings. But she's in the discussion, and we talked about how long lasting the impact of the women's game will be. If it'll be something we remember 10 years down the line, 15 years down the line, 50 years down the line. I hope so. I do think at the very least that, her name is sort of permanently etched into Canadian lore at this point.
Definitely. I mean, it's just the fact that she's managed to do it in the two, in Vancouver and in Sochi at this point. Like, she knows how to find the back of the net at the right time. And I know there's plenty of statistician. I haven't been drinking. Don't worry, people.
No one has.
Why would we be drinking today? You tell me. You know what I'm trying to say. People in advanced stats who say clutch isn't a thing. I don't know mathematically if it is or not, but some people pull it off. And even if it's purely luck, then let's reward luck out there, because this girl knows how to be in the lucky place at the lucky time.
Yeah, and I do think it's something more than that, but yes, whatever it is, four goals, including back-to-back game winners and back-to-back gold medal games, is pretty damn impressive.
I mean, no one's trying to take anything away from Paul Henderson for the rest of his career being, he was a good player, but he wasn't going to be remembered forever and ever in hockey lore, but one great tournament can do that for you. One big goal can do that for you. And this girl's got four of them now.
I mean, hell, we've been shitting all over Chris Kunitz, and rightfully so, but if he scores the winner in overtime tomorrow, he's never going to have to buy a drink, for the rest of his life.
No, I'll still argue against him. I'll turn down that gold medal when they come to present it to me. Each Canadian citizen gets a medal, right?
I assume so.
It seems to be.
I got a couple.
You got a couple now? Man, I'm coming back after stop by the bar for a few drinks to celebrate after work. Coming home, never in my life in this city have I had such a pleasant ride on public transportation. People in the city were in a fantastic mood on the ride home today. Everyone's talking and smiling, and I got my Canada on, and people are like just patting you on the back like you did something, and you're kind of like, I did do something. I was born in this country.
You were.
Thank you. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, being in your city when your city wins a championship is pretty close, but that's not even nationwide. There's really nothing that compares to an entire country going bananas at the same time. I mean, my mom couldn't care less about hockey. She was calling me after the game. My girlfriend, who's a casual fan at best, has been watching every single game and was, on pins and needles all afternoon long. It's really one of those things that transcends a lot of, I don't want to say barriers in society, but it's really
all the social barriers. It's true though. And I mean, living in Toronto, it's nice to, kind of have a hockey camaraderie with everybody in the city that I'm in. Because, there's pretty good opposition between myself and the natives. And it's fun just to be on the same page with the city and everybody. Like, no matter where you live, not everybody you know is going to be a Habs fan or wherever it is you happen to be. But when it's Canada, I mean, it's just, you can't cheer against. I'm sure there's some people out there who do, but you can't really cheer against your own country. So it's just this nice blanket. We're all cheering for the same guy. There's no animosity as long as you stay off Twitter.
always good advice.
Oh, that Twitter got ugly though. People are rude on that thing. Shocking information.
You don't feel like it was, I mean, I guess it's always 99% in jest, but there's always a few people who either are idiots or, don't quite understand the concept of humor.
Yes, there are many. Question three. We sort of talked about this already, but based on what we actually saw in the tournament, is Sweden v. Canada really the two best teams out there?
Yep, I think so. Mm-hmm. Like I said, you can make an argument for the Americans.
Yeah.
they're a bounce away from going to the gold medal game as well, and they look damn impressive through, you know, through the first bit of the tournament. But yeah, I think both these teams have earned their spot in the gold medal game. Neither of them have had to go through an absolute gauntlet to get here, but they've done what's been asked of them. Mm-hmm. And they've looked very, very good against, you know, their schedule, be it as it may, and both beat very good teams in the semifinals. And like I said, coming into it, I think there's a general consensus that these are the two most talented teams. Maybe Russia, maybe the States are in the mix as well. But yeah, I think these are 1-2 in some order, or 1A, 1B.
The opinion through the tournament up to Friday seemed to be that the Americans were the leading team in the tournament. But that was just because they seemed to be scoring plenty of goals. And I don't think they had a less or a more favorable schedule than Canada. But the type of hockey they were playing seemed to be a little bit different than what the Canadians played. And I mean, that run of scoring certainly came to a stop when they played an opposition like Canada today. So you're right. You can make an argument for the others, but I think when all is said and done, Sweden, Canada, that was the teams when you looked at the top to bottom talent on each squad going into this tournament. They look like they were the best. They seem like they've played like they're the best. Very solid hockey. It's going to be an interesting gold medal game. Harder to get the venom for, though, the way you get it up for the U.S. And I think there's a lot of Canadians out there. Yeah, exactly. I think there's a lot of Canadians out there who kind of feel like the gold medal, like some version of the gold medal was won today. Like bragging rights really felt like they were earned in the semifinal.
Absolutely. I almost had to keep reminding myself that there's actually a game after this.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're our biggest rivals, and part of it's just because it would have sucked to lose to them and have to hear that for the next 4 years. Yeah. And I mean, I think, yeah, so we're both saying Canada, Sweden are 1-2 in the tournament, but you could make the argument that maybe if Canada, U.S. are 1-2, because I think a lot of people felt this was the de facto gold medal game. And I'm not trying to jinx anything. I definitely don't think it's going to be easy against the Swedes, yeah. But you do kind of wonder if that was Team Canada's biggest test.
It seemed, going into it, I think
it.
I would
not by much,
it.
But they passed it.
They did pass it. They passed it, though, like I said, they not by much on the score sheet, but they played. That was a convincing win. I mean, they were the better team by far.
Like I said, that's what's been so funny about this team is they've really been dominating everyone. But every game, except for, you know, the two puff games, every game's been by one.
It's kind of hard to really get any venom for the Swedes because don't they kind of feel like Canada of Europe?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think they played pretty similar systems, which is weird to say because going into the tournament, the big question was, you know, or sort of the big discrepancy was the Swedes are so much more familiar with the big ice. They have more chemistry. Their system's going to work better on this ice than Team Canada's. And, you know, there was a big sort of stylistic line drawn between Team Canada and Team Sweden, but they both got great goaltending. They both got great defensive cores, yeah. And they both generate everything off, you know, make it hard for the guys to get the puck into the zone and use that defense to get, you know, things going in the other direction in a hurry. They both got a lot of speed as well. They're pretty similar teams in some ways. And Babcock's done a really good job of sort of, you know, even though they're still playing that Canadian North American style of hockey, Babcock has done a good job of big icing, you know, Team Canada style of play.
Big icing. I like that expression. Big iced it. Really, I mean, as good as the defense was, and this did stem from the defense's ability to, you know, the puck never lingered on Canada's, on the blue line at all. It just, 1 second it's on their stick, next second it's moving up the ice to the forwards. Yeah. But the forwards, I mean, a big portion of Canada's defense against the Americans came in the offensive zone. The fact that the Canadians just held it down there and did such a good job. The ice really felt like it was leaning the U.S.'s way the entire time, and the forwards did great at the forecheck and just keeping pressure down there. That really was turned into the offense, turned into a defense in a way.
Yeah, I mean, if you were going to do possession stats for this tournament, like, you know, Canada's Corsi and Fenwick would be through the roof. It would be unbelievable.
Yeah.
I know it's a, whatever it is, 8-game tournament, and that doesn't really mean a whole lot, but their possession stats must be just incredible.
I think for this team, you could consider those stats probably pretty representative of what they could do over 82 games against normal competition. I mean, this is so much talent. The thing is that today it's It was shocking to see a team that's only been playing together for a little bit more than a week now play a game as well orchestrated and everybody on the same page as they played against the Americans.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got to give credit to Babcock there.
Yep, you really do. And, it speaks to the depth as well. I mean, Steve Stamkos goes out with an injury and we all, it sucks. We all kind of shrug our shoulders and you move on to the next guy. John Tavares is maybe one of the top five forwards in the world, goes down with an injury mid-tournament and it sucks, but you just kind of throw Duchesne into the lineup and you don't really miss a beat. I mean, this is a team that's going to be playing for the gold medal, and Sidney Crosby, John Tavares, Steve Stamkos, Jonathan Toews, PK Subban, Marty St. Louis, none of them have scored a goal for us.
Speaking of injuries, I don't think either of these teams, Canada or Sweden, really has the we didn't have this guy excuse. Both are missing players, certainly, but both missing kind of players of the same stature. I mean, without Stamkos and without Tavares, that's, two of the top five talent, at least. I might be even not giving either of those guys enough credit. And the same with the Swedes. I mean, they're missing Sedin, they're missing Zetterberg, but I don't think either really gets an advantage in terms of health in this thing.
No, it's funny. For a while, it seemed like Team Canada's had tremendous health luck just because we're so deep, but we really haven't. I mean, we've lost two of our five or six best forwards. Yeah. It's just, like I said, we can kind of keep rolling.
And both teams elected not to play one of their elite defensemen for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I'm somewhat resigned to the fact that Babcock, just has it in for PK, and that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware, until this morning, that there was any sort of possibility of the Swedes not giving Ekman Larsson substantial minutes. That was unbelievable.
I don't know. And they didn't even bring Edman.
Yeah, I know. So maybe the stupid Canadian philosophy of burying your talent in favor of character is spreading across the Atlantic.
This isn't in here, is it? But since we're talking about how these teams are made up, what do you think was wrong with the Russians?
I think it's just getting to the point where, the Russians haven't won a gold medal in 20 plus years now.
Exactly.
There's still a lot of top-end talent coming out of the country, especially at the forward position, but it's almost getting to the point where you can't really consider them a world power anymore.
Well, Alexei Emelin made their decor, and it's pretty much unquestioned. You know what I mean? Emelin's fine, but where's Emelin even stack up in the Canadians' top six, let alone on, going out there on the international scale?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, as in the Montreal Canadiens, yeah.
Yes, no, exactly. Yes, Canadiens, the Habs. We'll use that from here on in this podcast to not confuse things. I like the fact that I can just always be cheering for a team called the Canadiens. Keeps it simple.
Yeah, I mean, he's much like Slavovoynov. He's, he's the number three defenseman on a pretty good NHL team.
But usually
that's not enough to make your national team. And, yeah, I mean, I know the Russians are still winning junior titles. They're still winning the Ottawa Championship, but... I don't really follow soccer, but someone made the analogy on Twitter that
you don't really follow soccer?
No, I don't. And I think this makes sense from the very little I know about a sport that I fucking hate. But at this point, pre-Russian hype going into the tournament is kind of like the way people talk about the English team going into the World Cup.
Right.
Where it's just kind of wishful thinking about a team that used to be good a generation ago and two generations ago, but is kind of a non-entity. That's a bit of an exaggeration. I mean, Russia's not a non-entity. They have Malkin, they have Datsyuk, they have Ovechkin, they have a lot of great players, but it's been a while since they've showed up.
Yeah. Question four. There's a big question coming in the tournament, especially a few months out, but now we're here. He's coming off a shutout. Do you have confidence in Carey for Sunday?
If it's not as high as how confident I felt in Brodeur in 2002, because Brodeur did have two cup rings at that point.
He did.
It's not a whole lot below that.
Yeah.
It's confidence in Carey, and it's also confidence in the decor.
Exactly.
I shut everyone down. But the combination of, if there was the slightest worry in anyone's head that Carey was going to have a stinker, that he was going to let in a soft goal, that he was going to have one of those four or five goal games, hasn't happened yet, and Sweden's damn good, but I don't think it's going to happen on Sunday either.
Right.
He is locked in. He looks fantastic. And I really think that if there was even a, you know, a scintilla of a debate still sounding, you know, still surrounding Carey Price's status in the league, that's done after this tournament. He's on everyone's list when you're talking about the best goalies in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if we win on Sunday, if he wins gold, then he's automatically in the discussion with Rask and Lundqvist and Quick for, you know, the next 4 or 5 years. You've got to put his name right at the top.
I mean, we were all excited about the chance to see what Carey Price could do with real defensemen in front of him. Six fabulous defensemen who knew how to play defense and weren't just pylons from the opposition. And what it is a lot of fun to watch. And he never has to get out of position. I mean, the only goals that they've scored on him so far, I believe, have been a couple of deflections and a breakaway. The rest of the time, it's just he's square to the puck. He's barely moving in a way. I mean, it's all just – it's working so well for him right now. We knew it was working well for him even when the Canadians were struggling and even when he was giving up 4 or 5. But that was just because, I mean, at some point, something's got to give when your D-man in front of you are just giving up so many opportunities. But with the defense in front of him on this team, we get to see what Carey Price can be at his best, and it's spectacular. It is really, it is spectacular.
He's so big, and he's so technically sound, and he's so smart that if he doesn't, you know, if you're not making him move side to side a lot, if you're not forcing him to make 50 saves a night, if he's in position, if he can see the puck, he's going to stop it every single time.
Yeah.
And he's also the type of guy you can tell when he's zoned in. And like midway through the first, I was watching it, and I told the guy I was watching it, I was like, if Carey sees it tonight, he's going to stop it. Oh, you can tell when he's in the zone, and he is just locked in.
Save percentage in these Olympics, 963. Goals against average, 0.74.
Yep.
Shibby.
He is undefeated in a Team Canada sweater, dating back to his junior days.
Yeah, 10-0, I believe. Goals against average is hovering right around 1. Save percentage somewhere in the 950 range, I believe. Fantastic stuff from this guy when he's for Team Canada. Fantastic stuff from him when he's with the Canadians as well. Some people just don't seem to notice that. You think we can finally be past that? Nah, they're still idiots. They're still idiots.
There are still idiots, which is shocking. But, you know, you take away that 5% of the population, which just doesn't know what they're talking about. Like I said, I think he's earned a sort of a permanent spot on the list now.
Yeah. I mean, seeing the game on Friday and just thinking to myself, even not obviously what he's got in front of him on Team Canada is maybe the best six defensemen that have been put together in the last 25 years. But
yep.
Even if you give him NHL caliber great D, give him the Boston Bruins defenseman, give him Chicago Blackhawks defenseman, even the LA Kings, give him any of those sets. I mean, I think you wouldn't imagine the difference. Carey Price, if Corey Crawford can get a Stanley Cup, Carey Price would probably have the Blackhawks verging on three-peat territory or something. Like, he's just such a great goalie, and I know those D in front of him were really good, but to imagine what somebody like him would benefit from playing, say, behind Zdeno Chara and that Boston Bruins defense and the way that's constructed, my God, that would be something.
I mean, you know, a goalie's the great equalizer in the league, but they're also the guys whose reputation can suffer the most from, you know, lack of support.
Yeah.
It kind of swings both ways, but you know, there are great goalies, just like there are, you know, great quarterbacks who don't have the pieces around them. And there are, you know, great hitters in baseball who never had the pieces around them. If you're a goalie stuck on a middling team, which has been Carey Price's lot so far through his NHL career, you fly under the radar a little bit.
Yeah.
Like you said, the way a guy like Corey Crawford doesn't. But that, I mean, that can all change, you know, regardless of his NHL, you know, relative lack of success in the NHL, that could all change on Sunday.
That's fair. Roberto Luongo did not look this good in Vancouver. That's for sure. Roberto was not a point of confidence, I don't think, that anybody really had going into that gold medal game. And he won it, and he did what he had to do, and full credit to him. But I don't remember going into the gold medal game against the Americans in Vancouver and thinking, Luongo's got this locked down.
I guess. I don't know. He was pretty damn good in that tournament, too.
You got to be
I think Luongo's the most unfairly maligned player of his generation. I thought he was fantastic at most of my picks.
All right, move us ahead here.
Yeah, moving on to number five. Yeah, number five, sorry. What has been the biggest disappointment of the tournament, men's or women's?
I don't think there was anything disappointing about the women's tournament, actually. I think on that side, for one, there was all that debate in Vancouver. Had the Americans and the Canadians kind of played themselves out of the Olympics altogether by just being so dominant, we saw a real shift in the women's game this year. Yeah, it was still Canada and the U.S. in the gold medal game, and maybe Sweden even took a little bit of a step back from there. They were kind of gaining on those two, but everybody else took a big step forward in the past 4 years, so I don't think there were any disappointments in that tournament. Even the bronze medal game, a lot of excitement around that one. The biggest disappointment, I mean, it's obviously got to be the Russians. This team was essentially on suicide watch. Even from just a standpoint of, you know, watching the tournament as a fan, you kind of wanted to see Russia be there because Russia really wanted it. You wanted Russia to be part of this story to crowning the kings in Sochi, and they just aren't. And they just, at no point, other than that one game against the Americans, at no point did the Russians seem like they might be throughout the entire tournament.
Yeah, I mean, the answer is the Russians, and more specifically, Ovechkin.
Yeah.
Fairly or unfairly, I mean, he wasn't great, and you knew if the team failed, you know, the lion's share of the blame was going to go on him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Kovalchuk seems to be avoiding that for the most part. Malkin seems to be avoiding that for the most part, but Ovechkin's getting it. And, you know, just because it ties into everything, all the questions we've had previously about Ovechkin, the previous flameouts in the Olympics, you know, the fact that he's never gotten to a conference final, let alone a Stanley Cup final. And, you know, this was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for these guys. And, you know, they had every bit as much pressure on them as Team Canada had in Vancouver. And not even get to the semifinals, you know, to bow out in the quarterfinals the way they did is unbelievable.
Well, and go ahead.
No, I was just saying, and I said this to you the other day, but I mean, Ovechkin's been really good the last season and a half, and had they gone out in one goal, I think Sid Ovi becomes a thing again. But if there is any even hint of a debate, if there is any burgeoning debate, that's pretty much buried at this point.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how much you can put on him, but it does it certainly does speak right into that narrative about him.
Yeah.
I mean, but that whole team came up short.
Oh, absolutely.
I wonder, some concern, I suppose, this sends him in the same tailspin he was in sort of post-Vancouver, where he disappeared for a while.
Yep.
I would hope not, because it's fun watching him in the NHL. But this blame falls on all of them. I mean, even his head coach threw him under the bus. It really seemed like Ovechkin was going to be the scapegoat.
Yeah, that was surprising. I couldn't believe that.
It's rough over there. They'll whip
you a little bit.
They'll whip you in the streets. I saw a video. What else is going on here? Question six, your non-hockey related highlight of the week.
I hate to be this guy, but I honestly don't know.
Oh, don't be that guy.
I know. I'm still loving the Olympics. I was loving it up until, you know, the last couple of days, but I've just been really basically not thinking about anything besides hockey, both men's and women's, since the Lavia game. I'll go with the bobsled.
You love your sled.
Off the top of my head, that was the first thing that popped in my head, and it was pretty cool to win another gold, but I'm pretty focused on hockey at this point. As great as everything else has been, off the top of my head, I'm struggling to think of anything else.
I said at the top of the podcast that ski cross was my favorite non-hockey sport in the Olympics, and Canada getting gold and silver in that, I think for me that was my favorite non-hockey moment of these Olympics. Yeah, I'm going to go with that one.
There you go.
I've been into a lot of it, though.
I have
wish
too.
It
I've
hadn't
been
happened
loving
in the overnight. That's the pain in the ass. I hate waking up and knowing it happened.
Yeah. Like, I've been loving it. Don't get me wrong. I just, when I'm trying to think off the top of my head of memorable moments, the first 40 of them are hockey moments.
Well, hockey's been a lot of fun. I won't take that away from it.
Number 7. This is a very interesting question. Is this the best Team Canada men's team you've ever seen?
In my lifetime, I think so. I really do. I mean, this is how many of these guys are quasi Hall of Famers already? You've got to think almost 70%. You could make an argument will have a good shot at the Hall of Fame. They're all between what, the ages of 24 and 32 years old, say for Marty St. Louis, who hasn't seen much time at all. Outside of Kunitz, I think every one of these guys is in the probably top three players at his position, kind of going down the chart. May not have the highest peaks, but I also think it doesn't have the bottom out that some teams have had. This is a really, really solid team. And, you know, as much as I was saying Luongo didn't look as good to my remembrance as Price's look going into this, if something happened to Price and you need to go with Bobby Lou in the gold medal game, I don't think I'd be all that much more disturbed considering how good everyone else is up front and how good Luongo is. I mean, these are two great goaltenders on this team. It's almost surprising at this point, considering the defense, especially that the goaltending was our main concern headed into the tournament.
Yeah, no kidding. They still got to win gold.
Yes, they do.
And if they don't do that, this is somewhat unfair, but if they don't do that, you know, they probably drop behind the Salt Lake team and the Vancouver team.
Well, yeah, if you don't win, that's history. That's how that happens.
But both on paper and in the way they've been dominating the competition, I would put this team above both of those teams, as well as the 2004 World Cup team.
That was a good team, but I think a few of those guys were beyond their prime.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this was a chance, you know, the 87 Canada Cup's a bit before my time. This team probably isn't quite at that level yet. They had a chance to be, but they probably missed that high water mark by a smidge. But, you know, this has a chance to go down as maybe the greatest generation of Canadian hockey talent.
Especially in
the
age.
We'll see where this goes. But, you know, Crosby, Stamkos, Taves, Nash, Keith, Weber, Doughty, Subban, Price, those guys are all kind of the same age. And, you know, when we look back at that in 10 years, I think this is going to be the type of team that you look back on in 10, 15, 20 years and you just go through the names. And like you said, half the guys on the team, two-thirds of the guys on the team are going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Quite a few of them will have multiple Stanley Cup rings. There's going to be a lot of Art Rosses and a lot of Hearts and a lot of Norses on this roster.
Like I said, this is a young team. There's already, I believe, 15 Stanley Cup rings on the team. I believe the Americans had 5. Obviously far more gold medals because, you know, we won a couple and they don't have any. This is a great team. And the way you saw what they could do against the Americans, you saw when it all worked well just how good they could be. And it's kind of shocking that the shooting percentage is so low. But I don't think that really takes away from some of the artistry that was especially shown out against the Americans.
No, it's too bad. I mean, you do wonder if this team had a little bit of luck.
Yeah.
You almost feel like they could have steamrolled through every game 5-0 the way that junior team did back in 2005.
Which resembles this team.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It basically is that team
exactly.
9 years later. You know, that would have been fun. That would have been interesting if they'd won every game by 3 or 4 goals, and, you know, there's just no doubt that this is the greatest Canadian team of all time. They haven't quite gotten the bounces. You know, they've been a bit of a victim of the systems and the ice, but yeah, I think it's safe to say they're one win away from being the best Canadian team of the NHL era in the Olympics and World Cup.
That all comes with the massive caveat of they have to win on Sunday, which is not a done deal at all.
No, I mean, we all feel pretty confident, and rightfully so, but like we said, it's a damn good Swedish team, probably the best or second best team in the world.
We will find out on Sunday.
We will.
Question number 8. Didn't do anything today, but he was probably the most feared player out there. When did Phil Kessel become so scary?
I don't know, but is he one of the 5 best players in the world now?
I think he is. Yeah, he is. Tavares, Stamkos, Crosby, Taves, Kessel? Is that where we are now?
Well, you got to put Ovechkin on there.
Oh, you do. Okay, so maybe not top 5. Top 10.
Maybe not top 5, but top 10, probably top 7 or 8.
And at the moment, definitely one of the most lethal.
Yeah, and he's frightening. Like, he is, and I mean, we know this as Habs fans too, but he's just terrifying when he's coming down the wing and he's got the puck on his stick.
He's got that speed. I mean, it's shocking because he looks chubby. And I don't know where it comes from, but somehow he just blows by everybody. I mean, he still had a few threats against Canada today. He managed to beat one defenseman, and they were playing such a sound system that it didn't really turn into a ton of opportunities. But every opportunity, essentially, that came from the Americans either was off the stick of Kane or Kessel or a couple times Pacioretty.
I mean, Taves and Datsyuk and Crosby are certainly better all-around players.
Yes.
But in terms of just guys who, when they're skating towards the net, you're going, oh, shit. Kessel, to me, is only behind Ovechkin and Stamkos.
Yep, I would agree.
You know, in terms of just pure goal scorers and guys who scare the crap out of you, Kessel's third on the list, I think.
I would go, yeah, definitely. As far as just pure offensive force, definitely top 3. And I might, at this point, I might even, this is, you know, we haven't seen Stamkos in a while, so I may be forgetting that a little bit. But I think it's just the way they play a slightly different game, so I find Kessel just a little bit scary, just because the puck is going to be on his stick for quite a while before he, you know, as he kind of charges in, so whereas Stamkos, it often kind of jumps in and off quickly.
Yeah, there's less of a buildup with the Stamkos. You're not holding your breath for 15 seconds the way you are with Phil.
Yeah, you really are. It's scary. It's scary now when he gets the puck. But he didn't score against the Canadians today.
Didn't even really come close. I mean,
no, he didn't. Americans were great in closest.
Yeah, he did.
Not enough patches. Not going to register a goal, it seems, in this tournament. I mean, he still got the finish game, but I thought he was coming into the tournament hot.
I mean, he was. I was surprised. I thought this might be, I think we said this maybe last week or 2 weeks ago, I thought this might be the coming out party for Pacioretty, and it wasn't quite that, but.
You know who it's oddly been the coming out party for? Despite the fact that he's played on the
Well, this fucking sucks. Here is what happened. Zach and I were in the middle of a very intelligent, very, very analytical, very thought-provoking discussion when all of a sudden we ran into technical difficulties. As they say, the system crapped out on us, and we're not entirely sure how to get it back, so we're really sorry about that. Looks as if the two-person portion of the podcast is over for the week, which is too bad, because I thought it was a good episode. There's obviously a lot to talk about. We were having fun. So what we're going to do is basically I'm just going to record a little piece on my own. Zach's going to do a little spiel on his own, and we'll basically staple the three audio clips together. So we do apologize for that. We also apologize to our special guests that we had on tonight, Bob McKenzie, Sidney Crosby, and Bobby Orr, none of those interviews will be able to run, unfortunately. But thankfully, we got a good 45 minutes or so in before the system went to crap. So I think there's a lot of good stuff in there. We had a couple other topics on the docket, obviously. I'm not going to go through them in any great detail, just because you know, that's just the nature of the beast when you run into these sort of things. But I'll go through them really quickly and a couple of very random thoughts about the rest of the tournament. I believe Zach and I were talking about Phil Kessel when everything went to shit. And just, you know, his emergence as one of the best players in the world. And, you know, for so long, that trade was a sore point among Leafs fans. It was, you know, it was ammo for Habs fans towards Toronto that they'd given up 2 first-round picks for this guy who was good, but by no means great. The dynamics of that trade have really shifted over the last year and a half, partially because Boston decided to ship Sagan out of town for no reason, and partially because Kessel has really taken the leap from good player, all-star caliber player, to Hart Trophy candidate. And doing so relatively late in his career. I mean, he's in the prime of his career, but this has been a somewhat unexpected leap to him to go into the stratosphere. And, you know, Habs fandom aside, it's been a pretty incredible story. And he was the guy, as I said, he was the guy on Team USA who really scared you. Kane can be dangerous. Oshie can be dangerous in some chances. Pacioretty can be scary. Parise can be scary. But Kessel was really the guy. You know, Pavelski has had a fantastic tournament. But Kessel was really the guy that you were worried might get 2 or 3 past Sid, and he got none past them. And Dan Bylsma taking some heat. A lot of people feeling, you know, the Americans as the home team, they didn't match up that well. They had the last change, and they didn't really shift the lines around that well. And, you know, Kessel was really hounded by Taves all night long. And Bylsma, rightfully so, I think, taking some heat there. Other things that we were going to discuss, obviously PK Subban, that was the number 9 question we had. You know, if we're over PK basically being a tourist in Sochi, he got that one game basically as a sort of half-hearted gesture from Babcock, and he hasn't gotten anything else. And obviously he's not going to be playing on Sunday unless someone gets injured between now and then. And, you know, the thing that's been interesting, I think it's becoming, you know, as much grief as we gave Yzerman in the lead up to the tournament, it's become increasingly obvious that I'm not sure Yzerman was the one who had doubts about PK Subban. I think that front office might have had to talk Babcock into taking him onto the team. And, you know, Babcock might have, I mean, he did agree to it eventually, but he, you know, clearly didn't have to agree to play him too much. So it's unfortunate. I still think this team would have been better served having PK Subban in the lineup than Mark-Edward Vlasic or Dan Hamhuis or Jay Bouwmeester, for that matter, although Bouwmeester had a good game today against the Americans. It's too bad. He's going to get his gold medal one way or the other, assuming, you know, NHLers go to the Olympics in 2018 or 2022. I don't think this is Subban's last trip to the Olympics. You know, he's young. I'm sure he's enjoying the experience. It's a good experience. He's, you know, we know he's a good teammate. We know he's going to say the right things. You would have liked to see him more. I know people are making the argument that you're getting plenty of offense out of Weber and Doughty, and you don't need another offensive defenseman on the roster, but regardless of where the goals are coming from, this is a team that's struggled to put the puck in the net. And you do wonder if having Subban on the ice for, even if it's only for 4 or 5 minutes a night, which, again, I think that's underutilizing a weapon. I think that's not the best way to use PK Subban. But even if you're giving Subban 4 or 5 minutes a night, which is basically what they're giving Hamhuis, I think he can make a difference in those 4 or 5 minutes. You put him on your first power play unit, your second power play unit. You put him out there, you know, you give him some favorable zone starts, and maybe he gets one past the goalie, maybe he gets two past the goalie. So it's too bad. Subban's going to get a medal one way or the other, but, you know, as a Habs fan and also as a Team Canada fan, it would have been nice to see him a couple more times, but that obviously wasn't in the cards. Interestingly enough, Montreal's first game back is against Mike Babcock and the Red Wings. And I will owe a debt of gratitude to Babcock if he brings home his second gold medal in a row, but nothing would make me happier than to see Subban put four past Jimmy Howard to make Babcock look like a little bit of an idiot. Question number 10, moving on quickly, whose on-ice performance has impressed you the most? The answer to that, and we kind of discussed this earlier, Drew Doughty. Honorable mention on this list, Olli Maatta of the Finns, who's 19 years old, I believe 19 or 20. We knew this guy was an up-and-comer. We knew he was going to be a great player. He has looked fantastic. He's basically, you know, he's not quite the same player as Doughty, but he's had a star turn as a young defenseman, similar to what Doughty had in 2010. And he looks really, really, really good. And, you know, not that the Penguins needed any more weapons, but they've got another one in their arsenal. And they've got a lot of good young blue liners coming up. And you do wonder, you know, this is a team that needs to win a cup. They've only got one so far. And honestly, they should have won 2 or 3 by now, probably. And you don't know how long the window's going to be open for. You really don't. So you wonder if they're going to trade one of those young defensemen for a Camilleri or a Vanek or a Callahan, someone like that, you know, looking for that missing piece to the puzzle. They brought guys in last year at the deadline and it didn't work out for them. So maybe they're going to stay the course. But for the team that's had as many injuries as they have, that's been as thin at times as they have, you wonder if they'll move maybe Simon Dupré or something again for Camilleri or Vanek or what have you. But at this point, Matt has become untouchable because he has looked fantastic for Team Finland. And give the Finns a lot of credit, man. I kind of think they're going to beat the Americans for the bronze tomorrow. And, you know, every tournament we go into these things, we talk about Canada, we talk about Sweden, we talk about Russia, we talk about, you know, the Czechs sometimes, we talk about the States. We almost never mention the Finns. And if they win bronze on Saturday, I believe this is correct. I could be off on this, but I think they'll have won a medal in every single Olympics in the NHL era. No golds, mind you, but they'll have won a medal in every single one. They've won more medals than any other country. And they're always in the mix. And a lot of credit to them. And you got to wonder if they would have squeaked by Sweden if Rask was in net. So not that Lettinen played poorly. Lettinen's a very good goaltender. But, you know, Rask, arguably the best goalie in the world. And you wonder if he could have pitched a 1-0 shutout there. Number 11 on the list. Are these games actually enjoyable to watch? Which is such a good question, because in the moment, in the heat of the moment, these aren't fun. You feel like your heart's about to burst through your chest. You know, it's stressful. It's not enjoyable. You know, I've always said the games I enjoy watching the most are, you know, Blackhawks, Ducks, or, you know, football games I enjoy watching the most are, you know, the Bears and the Seahawks. It's the games I don't give a crap about. It's the games where my team isn't playing. It's the games where I'm not hyperventilating and sweating and swearing like a sailor. During the moment, the games aren't enjoyable, but, you know, we're all going to look back on this tournament. Even if we win silver, I think we'll look back on this tournament and appreciate how special this team was. They've got to win gold, but I do get the feeling that, you know, A, like we said, that semifinal game against the States was, that had a gold medal feel to it. And, you know, it's always gold or bust for Team Canada, but you get the feeling that a silver this time around would be a little less disappointing than it would have been, obviously, in 2010 or even in 2002, even in 2006. I could be off on that. Maybe it's because we're the defending champs. Maybe it's because the teams played so well. Maybe it's because, you know, expectations were relatively low heading into the tournament in some senses. I think a silver would sting a little less than normally, but it's still going to sting because, like I said, this is Canada. We've got a chance to go back-to-back gold. We've got a chance to sweep men's and women's gold for the second Olympics in a row, which is pretty incredible. This could be the last time NHL players ever go to the Olympics. And you know, if that's the case, you want to be that last team to win that gold. And I think they're going to do it. I feel pretty confident. The Swedes are tough, man. I mean, they've got Lundqvist and Nets. They've got a defense that's every bit as good as Team Canada's. Their forwards aren't quite as good as ours, you know, and they've been hit by injuries. But they've been scoring well. They're familiar with each other. They're much more familiar with each other than our team is. They know the big ice. They've got that system. And like I said, they use, much like Team Canada, they use those skilled guys on the back end to get the puck going in the other direction in a hurry. That being said, Team Canada looks locked in right now. And I think they're the better team. I think it's going to be close, but I think Team Canada will outpossess them. They'll outshoot them. They'll outchance them. And Lundqvist is great. Carey's been playing great. It might come down to who makes one more play, one fewer mistake. I think Canada squeaks it out 2-1, 3-2. Could go to overtime, could go to a shootout. We all know what happened the last time those two teams played in a shootout in a gold medal game. And, you know, you always, that's the thing about these tournaments is you pray to God that it's not going to go to a shootout. But, I mean, that's what it is with the IIHF. There's always that thing in the back of your mind where this could go to a shootout and the gold medal game could be decided by a skills competition. Hopefully it doesn't get to that point. I'm going to say Canada wins again. Let's go. I was going to say 3-2, but that seems pretty high scoring for a game that has Lundqvist and Price in nets. Let's go 2-1. The trend continues for Team Canada of, you know, not scoring a whole lot of goals, but I think they'll end up winning this. So thanks for tuning in. We apologize again for the technical difficulties. It isn't ideal, but we'll be back next week, at which point the NHL will be back. So that's going to be a transition going from talking about the Olympics to talking about the NHL again, but the Habs ended things obviously on a hot streak. Hopefully, Carey Price and PK Subban will be coming back with gold medals. Max Pacioretty might be coming back with a bronze, and we'll pick up where we left off. And Habs with a tough schedule actually coming out of the gate, and obviously trade deadline just around the corner. So, you know, how this team performs coming out of Sochi, those six or eight games before the trade deadline could determine a lot of things because, you know, if the team picks up where they left off and they're in second or third place going into the trade deadline, as patient as Bergevin is, it's hard not to see yourself as a buyer in that situation. That being said, it's a tough schedule. This is not a great team. They've had good stretches. They've had really shitty stretches. And, maybe their players are tired coming out of the Olympic break. Maybe they go 1-5. Maybe they drop from third in the conference to 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th in the conference, in which case moving a Markov or moving a Gionta or moving someone else might make a bit more sense. But we've got plenty of time to talk about the NHL in future episodes. Obviously, it's all about the Olympics right now. This is a great week. That women's game, as I said, one of the more incredible sporting events that I've ever watched. Hopefully, we'll see if the men's game can live up to that hype. But it'll be fun. Thanks for tuning in. This is a quasi-solo Sean O'Neill signing off, and hopefully both of us will be back next week. Thanks. See ya. Gold line's gonna tell me where the light is.
Gold line's gonna tell me. Yeah, thanks, Sean, for that, and my sincerest apologies as well for... It was a mic malfunction. My mic simply stopped working. And so we're going to need to get that fixed. We'll figure out a way one way or another to make sure we have the podcast on next week as well, though. So sorry about that. As I say, we're having fun. A good flow on that one, but it is what it is. Sean did a good job rounding off some of the questions. Just a couple more points from my part on this. Sean alluded to perhaps it was Mike Babcock that didn't want PK Subban out there on the team, and the brass had to push for it. There's also Vincent Stanley, the website that covers mainly Montreal Canadiens, a little bit outside of that as well, sports website. They had an article up on Friday throwing out the theory. I don't really know where this came from per se, but they said it was Claude Julien who seems to be the biggest PK Subban dissenter on the coaching staff for Team Canada right now. Now, take that for what you will. I don't know how much of that to really... be true. There's no way to prove it one way or the other. It would kind of surprise me, to be honest, because I think Claude Julien has been stung by PK Subban more than a lot of head coaches, but maybe he doesn't believe in him for some way. Either way, a little bit more reason to hate Claude Julien if you're a Habs fan. So we'll take that whether it's true or not, won't we? And just to touch on Sean's point about Finland, if they do manage to medal against the Americans, then it will in fact be a medal in every Olympics since the NHL is going. I believe the only team to have accomplished that. So Finland, you know, they're kind of seen as the little brothers of the heavy hitters of the hockey world. At some point, I think we have to consider them perhaps to have passed Russia, really. I mean, considering the failings of Russia on the international ice in the past few years, and considering the fact that Finland manages to be there every year, Finland deserves a spot at the big boy table now. They've certainly been making a spot for themselves, and it's just nobody's been recognizing them. If they manage to get a medal in this tournament, you know, you got to tip your hat to all that they've managed to accomplish. And they had some major injury woes on that Finnish team as well. And so we'll sort of wrap it up on that. I got big plans for Sunday morning. Psyched. Tweet us if you wanted to let us know how you're watching Team Canada take on the Swedes on Sunday morning, a 7 a.m. start time on the Eastern Standard Time Zone, 4 a.m. I believe if you happen to be in Vancouver, you can do the math for if you're somewhere else in the country or somewhere else in the world. But it's going to be an early wake-up for me on Sunday. I got a keg being delivered sometime on Saturday afternoon. Keg coming in from the good people at Steam Whistle, and I hope by calling them that they won't make me pay for my keg. I'm going to have to pay for it. This isn't going to be a sponsored podcast at all. But I got a keg coming in. I got a packing a bunch of people into my apartment. Not sure how we're going to work that out. Soon as this podcast is finished, I'm going to start dismantling all of the IKEA furniture in my apartment. That is to say, all the furniture in my apartment. I'm going to burn it on the front yard because it's the patriotic thing to do. Thanks for listening. Sorry about the mess up. I got to thank at Lee's Carl, at Rick Morrison 10, at Jack underscore Wilson 31, at Wets 10, and at HabsFan 85, following the Montreal Bias on Twitter this week. That address is at the Montreal Bias. Very imaginative, I should say. And just looking ahead, because as Sean did say, the Habs are back in action. It's going to feel weird to get back into that, especially after watching the supreme talent we're getting to see here in these Olympics. But the Canadians back on the ice in Montreal, 7:30, the puck drops on that one. So hopefully a chance for the Habs fans to, in a way, salute Babcock for head coaching to another gold medal.
and a way to salute our gold medalist and Carey Price and PK Subban, no matter the amount of time Subban got to play. A little bit of chance for Subban to say, hey, Babcock, this is what I could have done. And so that's on Wednesday. And then Thursday, a game we'll also be reviewing by the time we podcast again at Pittsburgh Thursday night. So hopefully we'll get to see the gold medaled Kunitz and Crosby in that one, Thursday, 7 o'clock. And then Leafs in Montreal on Saturday. We'll probably do a podcast before then. But Leafs Saturday, you know, if the games against Detroit and Pittsburgh don't knock you back into the NHL spirit of things once we're into the hangover of the Olympics, I think a good Saturday night Leafs Montreal game. Get everybody fired up. That one at the Bell Center as well. Thanks for listening, everybody. Really appreciate that. Was there any other points I wanted to make? Oh, I had to mention this. I didn't get a chance to. This Krzysztof Godlewski, I hope I say it right, 57 shots. He's the goalie for the Latvians, put on just a spectacular performance. Now, this guy's a backup goalie in the AHL for the Syracuse Crunch, I believe, which is really, really something. I have to say, in a way, that was the highlight of my week. Obviously, it was beating the USA, and I'm feeling good about that, but that was something that was really spectacular. And, you know, maybe this is, you know, lightning in a bottle for this guy for one game, but hell of a game that he played. We'll see. Maybe this propels him. Maybe this gets him some attention and he manages to climb to the NHL now. But he looked like he'd run a marathon at points in the third period. And it was just a matter of time, I felt, before Canada did manage to bury one against him, because as superhuman as he was being, you can only be it for so long. But he did only allow one, and he played outside of his mind. And man, it was one of those performances that, had Canada lost, obviously would have been unbelievable disappointment from that team, especially as good as we've been talking about on the podcast, as good as they are. To go down to Latvia of all teams would have been just unbearable. But at the same time, I think I could have stood a loss to the Latvians and that performance from Godlewskis rather than lose to the Americans on Friday. You know, there's a nice story that would have gone over the Latvians. The Americans, that just would have been disappointment. So that was really something. Sunday morning, got my keg. Everybody was coming over, excited about that. Hopefully it'll be celebrations all day long. Thanks for listening. Apologize for the technical difficulties. Not much you can do when a mic dies midway through. We'll see y'all next time. Bye-bye.